A very good evening. On behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Special thanks to our host, Southeast Hebrew Congregation in Silver Spring, Maryland. Yuma, Ayin Gimel, Amud Beis, 73B, pagination page 146. About halfway down the page, the start of the new perek, a very famous perek, perek Yom HaKippurim, the halachas of Yom HaKippurim as a day on the calendar, as a Yom Tif, even Bizman HaZeh in our time. Yom HaKippurim Asur, on Yom HaKippurim it's forbidden, Ba'achila, eating, B'shasiya, drinking, B'rechitza, bathing, B'sicha, anointing, smearing, B'ne'ilas HaSandal, wearing leather shoes, U'v'tashmish HaMita, and with intimacy. Each one of these is a world of its own. Plenty of comments to make. We just ended off with Tashmish HaMita, though, with intimacy, to mention that in Shulchan Aruch it's brought that it's Asurim Gam B'Negiya, even in touching, is forbidden. There's a discussion about Harchakas. There's a discussion if it's just night or also day. But just reading straight Shulchan Aruch, even touching is forbidden, certainly actual intimacy. Now, the first two, Achila and Shasiya, are the essence of the Inisim es Nafshoseichem afflicting, and that, together with Malacha, with doing forbidden labor similar to Shabbos, are going to be Chayve Krisus, which is a very serious level of offense. The others is a discussion whether they are biblical or rabbinic, even though psukim are cited in the Gemara, but are those intended as drushas or are those intended as asmachtos? Are they doraisa drabonon? The next statement of the Mishnah really plays right into that. Because if something is rabbinic, it's very easy to understand how the rabbis came up with a leniency. If it's rabbinic, so they said, and they said. Our entire concept of Eruv on Shabbos, for example, is very simple. Really, there's no 600,000 people. And therefore, it's not a biblical Rishus HaRabim public area. It's only rabbinically forbidden to go from my house to there. So they said, it's forbidden to go from my house to there. And they said, if you do an Erev, if you do a door frame fence around the area, then you're allowed. So if it's rabbinic, it's very easy to understand the next statement of leniency. If it's biblical, we're going to have to understand a little bit better the next two lines. Let's see them. V'hamelech v'hakalo yirchatzu es peneim. A king, which we don't have right now, but a kala, a newly married woman, first 30 days, yirchatzu es peneim, should wash their faces. They're allowed to wash. V'hachaya, and a woman who just recently gave birth, first 30 days, Tinol es hasandal divri Rabbi Eliezer, is allowed to wear leather shoes. This is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. V'chachamim osrim, and the chachamim argue and say this allowance is not existing. But how do we understand this allowance if we accept it, as Rabbi Eliezer says, which is the way we rule in Shulchan Aruch, that this leniency exists? So the second leniency is not so hard to understand. A chaya, a woman who just gave birth, is allowed to have leather shoes. Apparently, not having leather shoes in their time, based on the tzina, the cold, would be damaging. And she has the equivalent of an ill person. And hey, ill people, the rules change. There are things that may be forbidden, which suddenly will become permitted because of illness. A person's walking in a dangerous area in terms of that his feet can get hurt. So perhaps we're going to tell him he can wear shoes. That's not comparable to the basic prohibition of wearing shoes. That you're throwing a health issue at me. Okay, a health issue. I could understand health issues. But what is the explanation in a newly married woman washing her face? Agreed. She has to look pleasant in front of her husband. And the first 30 days are crucial. I could accept all that. But where does the leniency come from? If it's biblical, if it's a biblical prohibition, how do you manage to allow her to wash if it's forbidden to wash? So the Shartzion from the Mishneh Berurah writes that even if this list of prohibitions is biblical, but washing is only biblical if you went ahead and washed your entire body. If you're just washing your face, that's rabbinic. And therefore, we're back to what we said could easily be understood. If you're dealing with a rabbinic prohibition, then I understand why you relaxed it because of something pressing that was important to you. In this case, Shalom Bayis. You wanted her to be endeared to her husband and she should look fresh, so she's allowed to wash. Okay, if washing face only is rabbinic, then I understand Heim Omru veHeim Omru, how Chazal were able to relax the prohibition for her. Now, there's a fascinating Chaye Adam, which is brought by the Mishneh Berurah, which says that since people spend the entire day in shul, he doesn't understand why you should have an allowance for this woman, this newly married woman, to wash her face. He's like, let's picture the scene of what he's writing about. If the man leaves the house, let's say 7:30 in the morning, and she's still sleeping, and then she wakes up, question, wash her face, not wash her face. She doesn't expect to see him all day, if that's true. So then what's she washing her face for? So that's a fascinating Chaye Adam, and you have to accept it to the extent it should be accepted. I mean, if that's the situation, then so be it. It's a leniency that's really not necessary, perhaps. Regarding the leniency of Chaya, of a woman who just gave birth, so according to the Mishnah, she's entitled to 30 days of wearing leather shoes. The Poskim say nowadays we have shoes that will alleviate any discomfort, any health issue. She's not going to have her feet on the floor. You have plastic, you have rubber, you have synthetics. I mean, there's plenty. There's what to wear. And therefore, some posts can believe that this leniency would not apply. It's not a health issue. Other poskim, in a fascinating approach, say Chazal absolved her of the prohibition of Ne'ilas HaSandal. They absolved her because in their time it was a health issue. That's the way they constructed the prohibition. And if they absolved her, you can't come along and make them obligated. And it's really a question of how you understand the original prohibition. Was it like we were absolving her because it was a health issue and it's no longer a health issue? Or they absolved her. They never made the legislation regarding her. And therefore that would remain in place even today. Question, of course, would be if she's more comfortable, some sort of leather, orthotics, or whatever, is she allowed to do that or not? The Mishnah continues and tells us, Ha'ochal kechoseves hagasa kamoa uchugari nosa, a person who eats the size of a large date, it and its pit. So we're not anticipating that he's eating the large date. And dates come in different sizes, and they knew which date that was being referred to. Just like when we talk about the size of an egg. So Rav Moshe went ahead and figured out that if there's a jumbo egg, and an extra large egg, and a large, and a regular, and a medium, and a small, and he figured out what's considered the average, So they knew what a large date meant. We're not talking you're going to eat the large date, because we're talking with the pit. But that size, including its pit, how much water gets displaced from it, that's considered eating on Yom Kippur. V'ashosam l'lugmav chayiv, and a person who drinks the size of a cheekful is chayiv. Kala ochlim mitztarfim l'chachoseves. Any eating joins to this size. So if a person eats two different foods, one half date and one half date, they're going to join. V'chalamashkim mitztar from the milo lugmav, and all drinks, you have grape juice and water, it's going to join in this amount. Ocha v'shosa e mitztarfin, but eating and drinking doesn't join. And that's where we get this concept that a person who does need to eat on Yom Kippur, if it's possible to keep them under this threshold, then they're not halachically having considered truly broken their fast. I know some people who will purposely have, they'll purposely recommend that people have water or juice and watermelon, because both will give you significant hydration, but one's considered a liquid, one's considered a solid, and between the two, you're getting maximum hydration into the person. The other variable, which the Mishnah does not address directly, is the question of how frequently can you consume these amounts for this person who's ill, but not ill enough to be told to just break his fast and be done with it. How frequently can he have this and still be considered fasting? So we work with a quick number of approximately 5 minutes between instances. That's by food. And then there's a machlokes by drink, if the drink follows the same pattern, approximately 5 minutes, or the drinking can even be brought to a shorter frequency. In any case, though, if you just picture a person taking approximately an ounce of liquid every 5 minutes is giving him 10 to 12 ounces every hour, that's a pretty significant amount. And I think many, many of the cases that we encounter of health issues, if you told the person that he could have that amount per hour, that would alleviate the risk factor. Of course, if a person is truly sick, he doesn't have the patience to be sitting there drinking every 5 minutes, and that's a whole different situation. A person who's truly ill, under doctor's orders, would be breaking their fast straight away. Yeshe koach, have a great evening.